I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is David Broza, famed Israeli singer, songwriter, and world musician. We'll also have a visit from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Borel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom and a slightly early Chag Sameach. With Yom Kippur, the Great Day of Atonement, concluded last night, it's time on the Jewish calendar for gratitude, relaxation, and fun. This Wednesday night, our month of Jewish holidays continues with Sukkot, the week-long celebration of the harvest. But before we hear about Sukkot or Sukkot, the Feast of Tabernacles, we have a little unfinished business to take care of left over from Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, which we observe from Kol Nidre on Friday night through Ne'ilah last night. As important and sacred as this holiday is, I would be remiss as the Two Jewish Radio Show host if I didn't give you a little bit of Kol Nidre shtick. For as beautiful and moving as this melody is, as much as it's the single piece of music that affects Jews more than any other, it's not only great cantors who have chosen to record this amazing song, and Kol Nidre has not only been sung well. Sometimes it has been sung, well, by non-cantors and terribly. In a last ad on Yom Kippur and as preparation for a lighter season of joy and celebration ahead, I must note that a couple of non-Jews have tried their vocal cords at Kol Nidre with less than stellar results. First, here is the legendary Italian pop singer Perry Como crooning Kol Nidre.
Kol Nidre, Vesole, Ushvue, Vacharome, Vekonome, Vekenose, Vahi.
And then there is perhaps my all-time favorite bad Kol Nidre, pop singer Johnny Mathis of Chances Are fame, warbling Kol Nidre. You know, sort of.
Kol Nidre.
For my money, is the worst Kol Nidre I've heard. Although, there's a competitor, and believe it or not, he is Jewish. Yes, Neil Diamond once sang Kol Nidre in his version of the movie The Jazz Singer. Here it is.
Kol Nidre, Vesole, Vacharome, Vekonome, Vachino, yeah. در نه میام کی پوریسه
That was Neil Diamond's Kol Nidre on the Rocks, or maybe on the ropes. Wow, horrible. Look, I don't sing Sweet Caroline, and Neil Diamond should stay away from Kol Nidre. Well, now that we've finished off Yom Kippur, after those selections, we have totally finished it off. It's time to move on through the fall Jewish festival cycles. Sukkot begins this Wednesday night. It marks the great fall Thanksgiving festival, the Feast of Tabernacles or Booths, when we are commanded to remember the transitory nature of our ancestors' wanderings through the wilderness of Sinai, as well as the transitory nature of our own lives. In the season of the fall harvest, when we eat the first and best produce of the natural world, we take a week to demonstrate our gratitude for the necessities of life, food, shelter, and clothing. Following the commandments given in the Torah, Jews are supposed to fulfill the mitzvah by building a sukkah, a temporary tabernacle, booth, or a hut outdoors, designed to last just a week, well, actually 8 days, to eat in and perhaps sleep in. We decorate it with the symbols of the harvest, fruits and vegetables primarily, and enjoy a fall festival celebrating the goodness of the world that God has given us. And enjoyment is the key. This is our Zman Simchatenu, we say in Hebrew, the season of our joy, when we are literally commanded to celebrate our good fortune. It's a great lesson in appreciating the gifts we've received and the many good things we already have. Gratitude is an experience few of us can maintain for long, but it is the essential source of much that is profoundly religious and profoundly good. May we each find a way to be grateful during this coming week dedicated to gratitude. Sukkot begins this coming Wednesday night, and it's traditional to invite guests to join you and eat a meal in your sukkah, an al fresco way to celebrate the harvest and God's bounty. Well, to play us in with some better music than we heard earlier today, here's our guest this morning, David Broza. A song from his newest project, East Jerusalem, West Jerusalem. It's a cover of rock star Nick Lowe's What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding, sung with the Jerusalem Youth Choir, the only choir that includes Palestinian and Israeli youths singing together.
As I walk through,
my spirit gets so downhearted sometimes. So where are the strong, and who are the trusted, and where is the harmony, sweet harmony? Because each time I feel it slipping away, it just makes me wanna cry. What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? Oh, what's so funny about peace, love, and understanding?
That was David Broza, an Israeli superstar, a world music figure of importance, a singer-songwriter, and an activist for musical cooperation across all boundaries, singing What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding. Find out what David Broza's newest projects are when we return in a few moments right here on Too Jewish. Join the Tucson Hebrew Academy as we celebrate and honor an all-around mensch, Pima County Supervisor Ray Carroll, on Sunday evening, November 2nd, 2014, at the JCC. Supervisor Carroll's tremendous contribution to THA as a board member and the work he's done as a great public servant for Tucson and Pima County is an inspiration to people of all faiths and backgrounds. Ray Carroll's commitment to our community is an example of how to make the world a better place. Also at this year's Tikkun Olam event, we're thrilled to welcome back world-renowned comedian, author, Two Jewish Radio Show guest, and Jewish Day School graduate, the very funny Joel Chasnoff, as MC and side-splitting entertainer. In addition to this hilarious comic and our worthy honoree, Tikkun Olam offers dinner, a silent auction, and a great opportunity to socialize. I can personally tell you, it's one of the best and most enjoyable evenings of the whole Tucson year. This is the Tucson Hebrew Academy's largest fundraiser. We'd love to have you join us. For tickets or sponsorship, call 529-3888, 529-3888, or visit our website, thaaz.org.
A Taste of Judaism, the largest and most successful outreach program in the country, celebrates its 15th anniversary with a special family class and in new locations. Over 5,000 people have completed the course offered by Temple Emmanuel, Arizona's first congregation. It's your turn. Taste of Judaism is free and open to all, Jewish or not. And we feed you too. Rabbis Sam Kohan and Rabbi Batsheva Appel lead an open, interactive exploration of the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on spirituality, values, and community. Classes are offered all over the Tucson area, and enrollment is easy. Call 520-327-4501 to sign up, or go to our website, templeemmanueltucson.org. The class includes delicious taste of traditional Jewish foods. It's free and open to all, regardless of religious background. But please, pre-enroll by calling 520-327-4501. Taste of Judaism has both daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, East Tucson, and Green Valley, and the very popular Taste of Judaism family class held at Tucson Hebrew Academy. It's a great learning opportunity for the whole family. There's no fee or obligation, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Mila at 520-327-4501 for more information and to register today for Taste of Judaism.
We are delighted to welcome the two Jewish art guests this morning, a favorite guest. He's world musician, Israeli guitar hero, and longtime musical star, David Broza. Good morning, David. Welcome back to Two Jewish.
Good morning. Thank you. It's good to be back.
So, different kind of question today. You are known for all of your international connections, for having created a wonderful image and impression of Israeli musicians all around the world of collaboration. It's been a difficult summer for collaboration and for Israelis. Tell us a little bit about whether that affects your music. Any, has that changed your experience?
Oh, it hasn't. If anything, it has strengthened my belief that music is that's one of the few resorts that we have through which one can find some kind of consolation and perhaps a way to communicate, even in the worst of situations. This past summer was a disaster for everybody. Very sad times. But there's more to it than just a mere another war or another conflict. It's just the ongoing effect that it has on everybody in the region. And in my field, you know, I'm a musician. I'm a singer-songwriter. I'm a performer. I'm an entertainer. That's first. And then I happen to live, you know, in Israel, and this is my home. I was born here, my mother's born here, my grandma's from here. We've been here for quite a few years, and several generations, my kids and all. So you try to do something for your society, for the society in which you live. I think most people do get involved. And my way of getting involved has always been trying to figure where I can be effective, and most effective is where people are somewhat under stress, duress, miserable. I come with a guitar, I can play. I give myself to those causes and to those moments and help, you know, give some kind of a hopeful hour to entertain people under these conditions. And the wars that have been here and the hard times and times of terror have been a big test. And they've always driven me to try to find ways to reach out to all walks of life in Israel. Israel is such a complex society because it's made up of literally, you know, dozens and dozens of nationalities that have all emigrated here, and you have the native, you know, the Palestinian citizens, or the Arabs and the Palestinian origin who live within our country as part of society, and we have to bridge, you know, all these different cultures, and music is a natural way to do it, but you have to work on it. Yeah, it's not a doesn't come naturally. So I have, over the past 40 years, I've found kind of interesting ways of getting involved with music groups or with education platforms and programs, and slowly find my way to the people who I, now looking back, I've been, you know, saying, walking this passage over years, and some of them are Arab, some are Muslims and Christian, Jewish, all from the region, all living here, and all having to live through whatever goes here, whether it's war or wonderful times, and we always have a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Now, right now, we're coming out of a bad summer.
That's a great beginning. We will talk much more with singer, songwriter, entertainer, and, by the way, musician David Broza when we return in just a few moments here on Too Jewish. Now I want to express my thanks. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm glad and grateful that the modest cash awards we started with some 10 years ago have grown into a rather substantial amount with the help of donors like many of you. The Kohan Foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and A. Irma Kohan of blessed memory, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the whole Jewish people. That service can be in one of four areas: unity, education and information, creative arts, or rescue. Our past award winners include some truly amazing people, and we are grateful for the chance to reward them and their fine work. Do you know of someone who could qualify for a Kohan Award in 2015? Or will you consider participating in this work yourself? Please go to our website, www.kohanaward.com, KohanAward.com, where you can find all the information on nominating and on participating in this great work. And we'll be glad to hear from you. Our goal is to help people who work for the whole Jewish people.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We welcome Pam and David of Freedom Smoke. So your product, a smokeless way to get off of tobacco, people don't really understand exactly what's wrong with cigarettes, or they think it's the same thing that's wrong with your product. Can you explain the difference?
That's true, Rabbi Kohan. Part of it is cigarettes themselves, the FDA made them release the ingredients. There's over 3,000 ingredients in cigarettes. There's four ingredients in electronic cigarettes: propylene glycol, vegetable glycerine, flavorings from Flavor Art in Italy, who is who we use, and nicotine itself. Our nicotine is USP hospital grade. It's the finest that you can purchase. Nicotine in and of itself is not harmful to the human body. That's why we have so many doctors referring patients that they just cannot get to quit smoking cigarettes. They send them to us for a much healthier alternative.
And where do people go and how do they find your stuff?
They can go to one of our three stores here in Tucson. We've got one at Orange Grove and River, one at Broadway and Swan, and one at 12th and Valencia. Or they can go online to freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thanks very much, and we'll talk next week.
Always a pleasure.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, twojewishradio.com, or download us at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. You know, with Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur over the last 2 weeks and lots more Jewish holidays coming up, Sukkot begins this Wednesday, by the way, and then there's Hoshana Rabbah, Shmini Atzeret, and Simchat Torah, a veritable outpouring of fall festivals. I think it's time to explain to all of you once again a critical component of the Jewish holiday experience, our odd relationship to food and festivals. As a general principle, Jewish holidays are divided between days on which you must starve and days on which you must overeat. Although most Reform and Conservative Jews are familiar with all the overeating holidays and fast only on Yom Kippur, Orthodox Jews can observe no fewer than 16 fasts throughout the Jewish year based on the time-honored principle that even if you are sure that you are ritually pure, you probably aren't. In any case, although there are many Jewish feasts and fasts, there are no holidays requiring light snacking. Now, unlike Christians who just go to church on special days like, you know, Ash Wednesday, on Jewish holidays, most Jews take the day off. That's because Jews, for historical and personal reasons, are more stressed out than others. So, anyway, here is your handy dieting guide to the Jewish holidays, starting with Rosh Hashanah, which occurred, 2 weeks ago, and going forward through the fall, winter, spring, and summer, all categorized by their dietary requirements. Rosh Hashanah, feast. Tzom Gedaliah, fast. Yom Kippur, more fasting. Sukkot, feast. Hoshana Rabbah, more feasting. Simchat Torah, keep feasting. The month of Cheshvan, no feasts or fast for a whole month. Get a grip on yourself. Chanukah, eat latkes, potato pancakes. Tenth of Tevet, fast. Do not eat potato pancakes. Tu Bishvat, feast. Fast of Esther, fast. Purim, eat pastry. Passover, do not eat pastry. Shavuot, feast, but only on dairy foods like cheesecake or blintzes. Don't eat meat. 17th of Tammuz, fast. Definitely don't eat cheesecakes or blintzes or meat. Tisha B'Av, very strict fast. Don't even think about cheesecake or blintzes or meat. Month of Elul, end of cycle. Enroll in the Jewish Center for Eating Disorders before the High Holy Days arrive again. Well, I hope that's all clear now. You may never eat again. But then again, if you fasted on Yom Kippur yesterday, I'm sure you're going to have to eat soon anyway. Good luck. We welcome Ramivi Na and Israel Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat. I trust you had an easy fast.
Yes. Boker Tov.
Yeah, Chag Sameach. It's almost time for Sukkot, the great harvest festival, which begins this coming week. As lovely a time as it is here in Tucson, in Israel, Sukkot is a vacation week. That's a very different experience in Israel. What was your Sukkot like growing up in Beit Shean?
Sukkot for us start on Motzei Yom Kippur.
The end of Yom Kippur, right after the shofar blast and the breakfast.
And our tradition for many, many years is as soon as we will drink a little bit of tea, the men will drink a little bit of arak.
Oh, yeah. How did I know you were going to say that?
Yeah. And then and the time that my grandma and other people in my family, mostly the women, will go to the kitchen and prepare everything and bring, the men will start building the sukkah. So it's a tradition for many, many years, and we like by the just before we will eat, the sukkah is already ready. Ready.
That's fast.
And yeah, it's fast because they're already, you know, very trained, and thanks God we have a lot of, you know,
a lot of guys
and kids, and everyone will do, you know, chick chack. And then the only thing we need to do is to decorate it. And during the week, the kids will come every day and we'll do something. And Sukkot is really the holiday of the family, all the family. All my family will come to my grandmother. It's actually, and now it's the once a year, only one time that all the family gather.
And it's Sukkot, that's when everybody comes.
And it's next to the Bet Knesset, so it's beautiful.
Right next to the synagogue. You know, yeah. In biblical times, Sukkot was called Hechag, like the holiday, like it was the only holiday. Mm-hmm. Okay, obviously Jews have lots of holidays, but it was so important because it was the agricultural festival of the harvest.
Right.
It still is in Israel, isn't it?
Yeah, it still is, and it's I think it's unique, although this year is Shnat Shemitah, so it will be different.
Now, the Shemitah, for those of our listeners who don't know, is the sabbatical year in which you're not supposed to eat the produce of the land of Israel except as it occurs naturally. You're not supposed to harvest, you're not supposed to reap. It's more complicated how it actually works today, but this is the Shemitah year. This is the sabbatical year.
Yeah, but yeah, it's connected to the land, to the agriculture, and actually Sukkot and Shavuot, both of them connected to the agriculture. But also something that it's very unique in Israel, it's Birkat HaKohanim at the Kotel.
The priestly blessing at the Kotel, at
yeah,
the Western
so,
Wall, which
yeah,
is phenomenal.
So, yeah, so Sukkot, it's a really 7 days, not the 7 days, but the Chol HaMoed, you know, many people will travel.
Days.
It's a time for religious, for Orthodox, that can they can travel on the Chol HaMoed.
On the intermediate days of the holiday,
yeah.
Right?
And they will go to Jerusalem, will be packed, and Birkat HaKohanim, it's a fascinating ceremony to see at the Kotel.
Amazing experience. I've had the privilege of doing that with my dad, who's also a Kohen, you know, a priest, and it's a very powerful thing. You know, hundreds, maybe thousands of
yeah.
men with their talises, with all the Kohanim blessing, the I don't know, tens of thousands of people there. It's a wild experience.
Yeah.
Chag Sukkot Sameach, a great holiday of Sukkot. And next week we'll talk about your open house.
Thank you. And I hope everyone knows that I'm holding like open house on the October 12th, 4 to 7. For more information, contact the Weintraub Israel Center of the Federation.
Or listen to Two Jewish next week and we'll talk about it some more. Chag Sameach. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, we began last week speaking about refugees. Jews have been refugees and migrants throughout our entire history, and we often left where we were because of religious persecution. But there are other motivations today. Let's continue talking about the whole question of immigration, refugees, what those things are.
Right. There are a lot of motivations that impel people to leave the land of their ancestors and the land of all their high school friends and seek refuge in a new country.
And a place where they know the language, yeah. they know the customs,
right.
the culture.
And the first example, of course, is Abraham in the book of Genesis, who God says, go forth from your home, your native land, whatever, to a destination that I haven't even revealed to you, and I will make you the father of a great nation. And the whole story of Jewish history unfolds from this giant leap of faith when Abraham sets out for an unknown land as an immigrant
or a
refugee or whatever.
I've always wondered what Sarah said when he came home and said, we're leaving and I can't tell you where.
Right, right. Good question. So, I mean, there's two things that strike me about this whole question. One is, so 9/11, which we commemorated fairly recently, one of the many articles that I saw on the occasion was an article containing poll data over the past 10 or 15 years, which showed that right after 9/11 and for a year or two thereafter, huge percentages of Americans identified as the number one issue facing our country, to which we should devote all our resources and top priority in terms of fighting it, was terrorism. And there was a pretty big consensus about that. Now that has shifted to an issue that I find almost shocking, which is that roughly the same percentages now identify immigration or immigrants themselves as the number one problem facing our country and the number one issue to which we should devote resources, time, money, energy to combat. And what I find strange about that is we are a country of immigrants. Our ancestors almost all arrived from somewhere else. And even the ancestors of Native Americans, if you go far enough back, came from somewhere else. So what causes people to move sometimes vast distances to unknown and inhospitable territories where either physically the place is inhospitable or socially or people are made to feel unwelcomed or hunted or whatever? Well, one thing is climate change. I mean, in ancient times, why did Native Americans come here? Ice age. They had to seek warmer places. So
they crossed the
Bering Straits,
right.
and they went south to places where they could live more easily and find more food, basically, and eventually grow more food instead of in the frozen wastes of northeastern Siberia. Climate change isn't so much a factor today in immigration. Certainly,
it may become so again.
Right, it could be. But certainly political persecution is. And one of the most frequent causes is armed conflict. So when we look at these floods of women and children coming from Central America, we often imagine that they're just coming to be quote-unquote maids and gardeners They're coming for economic benefits, whereas in fact, they're fleeing civil wars and armed conflict in multiple countries of Central America. I see we'll have to come back to this next week. Sorry we've taken up so much time.
No, that's okay, Tom. And Chag Sameach, happy holiday of Sukkot, when we lived in tabernacles to remind ourselves we had been immigrants.
Exactly.
We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Hi, I'm Ben. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can help provide a Jewish education to families at no cost to you by redirecting your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. You can help make Jewish education affordable.
Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. This lets JETCO give scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Congregation Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K through 8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction or donation. When you give to JETCO, you get 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income taxes are reduced by the exact amount you've given. Supporters of JETCO can give up to $1,053 for a single filer or $2,106 for a married couple filing jointly and get that whole amount back from state income tax.
Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442. Or you can go to JETCO.org.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Burglar breaks into a home and looks around. He hears a soft voice say, "God is watching you." Thinking it's his imagination, he continues to go through the house. Again, the voice says, "God is watching you." The burglar turns his flashlight around and sees a parrot sitting in a cage. The burglar says, "Okay, parrot, what's your name?" And the parrot answers, "Moishe." The burglar says, "Moishe? What kind of people name a parrot Moishe?" And the parrot answers, "The same kind of people who name their German shepherd God." Yes, that's the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. Remember, God is watching. And now a word of Torah. Sukkot, the Feast of Tabernacles or Booths, is easy to overlook in the context of the fast flow of fall festivals. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are followed just 4 days later by the harvest holiday, whose principal observances seem to be based in an earlier age, the agricultural celebration of bringing in the fruits, vegetables, and grains that will carry us through a barren winter. In today's world, where food comes from across the globe and virtually any kind of produce is available year-round, a particular week to celebrate reaping the rewards of the natural world might seem archaic. But the move in recent years towards seeking locally sourced produce and grains produced using sustainable agricultural methods from native seeds and finding fruits, vegetables, and other natural products at farmers' markets and through growers' cooperatives testifies to an understanding that what we produce from the ground, with God's help, is the best food to eat and serve to our children, especially if it's produced nearby. There's nothing tastier than ripe, fresh vegetables and fruits harvested recently at the proper time and season. They taste better and offer many health and environmental benefits as well for us and for the planet. Perhaps that's just the way God intended us to live. For our ancestors in ancient Israel, Sukkot was considered to be the most important observance of all. It was called Hechag, the holiday, in the Mishnah, as though it were the only festival. Of all the festivals, this is the one most often referred to in the Bible, and it must have been the one on which most people came to Jerusalem to express their gratitude to God. It was far easier to make a pilgrimage on foot to the holy city when the harvest was complete than it would have been to do so in the spring for Pesach, when planting and weeding had to be done, or in the early summer at Shavuot, when the first crops had to be harvested while the rest needed to be tended. Sukkot in ancient Jerusalem must have been a remarkable scene. sukkahs all over the city, songs and feasts for the full week. Today our focus on Sukkot is on thanksgiving to God for the bounty of the harvest. This season, known as Zman Simchatenu, the time of our joy, is blessed with Torah readings that focus on the rituals of the ancient festival with some additional mystical passages. Here, too, the Torah reminds us that we exist solely by the grace of God, and we offer thanks for the natural world that God created to help provide for our needs. A good reminder this week, and always. And a final note, this is the sabbatical year, according to Jewish tradition, the Shemitah, and you'll hear more about that over the course of this 5775 year, not only on Sukkot. David Broza has been an Israeli music superstar for decades. The singer-songwriter has created a legacy of great melodies that have kept on the Israeli pop charts regularly, and he is also a world music figure of importance in Europe and America. Perhaps best of all, David Broza has a wonderful history of collaborating across all cultural and ethnic barriers to make successful and beautiful music. Find out how this summer's conflicts affected Israel and David in a few moments when we return on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
A Taste of Judaism, the largest and most successful outreach program in the country, celebrates its 15th anniversary with a special family class and in new locations. Over 5,000 people have completed the course offered by Temple Emmanuel, Arizona's first congregation. It's your turn. Taste of Judaism is free and open to all, Jewish or not, and we feed you too. Rabbis Sam Kohan and Rabbi Batsheva Appel lead an open, interactive exploration of the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on spirituality, values, and community. Classes are offered all over the Tucson area, and enrollment is easy. Call 520-327-4501 to sign up, or go to our website, templeemmanueltucson.org. The class includes delicious tastes of traditional Jewish foods. It's free and open to all, regardless of religious background. But please, pre-enroll by calling 520-327-4501. Taste of Judaism has both daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, East Tucson, and Green Valley, and the very popular Taste of Judaism family class held at Tucson Hebrew Academy. It's a great learning opportunity for the whole family. There's no fee or obligation, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Mila at 520-327-4501 for more information and to register today for Taste of Judaism.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
The leader of a synagogue's car exploded in what is a suspected arson attack in Atlantic City, New Jersey, last weekend. The Friday night after Rosh Hashanah, police discovered a Ford Explorer engulfed in flames outside Congregation Road of Sholem, an Orthodox shul in Atlantic City. The fire caused severe damage to the parking lot and the synagogue's outer walls, although it did not ignite the temple itself. That car belonged to David Kushner, who is the spiritual leader of the Southern New Jersey synagogue, although not an ordained rabbi. Kushner runs a wedding hall in Lakewood, New Jersey. He learned about the fire when he came to Shabbos services the next morning. The car has been towed overnight immediately after the incident by the fire department for further investigation. "I saw the charred remains," Kushner said. He said that firemen were examining whether the blaze was a hate crime. The synagogue hasn't had any previous occurrences of anti-Semitism. The fact that in America 2014, a rabbi's car parked at a synagogue during Rosh Hashanah services could be engulfed in flames, and the subject of arson investigation is beyond comprehension, said Nancy Baron-Bear, the ADL's regional director there. Synagogues have to be alert every day. Too true. In Israel, former Tel Aviv mayor Shlomo Chichlahat has died at the age of 86 in Tel Aviv, the city he led on its path to becoming a 21st century magnet for openness, creativity, dynamic growth, and tourism. Born in Germany in 1927, Chichlahat rose to the rank of brigadier general in the Israeli army and went into politics in 73. He became the mayor of Tel Aviv in 1974 and served till 1993, essentially from the post-Yom Kippur War period into the Oslo Accords prosperity boom. Chichlahat presided over Tel Aviv's transformation into a vibrant and open urban center, dynamic economic, artistic, cultural, and entrepreneurial center of Israel, easily distinguishable from the more religious, restrained, and bureaucratic capital city of Jerusalem. Chichlahat was formerly affiliated with the Likud party but became a strong supporter of Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, the main force behind Israeli peace efforts with the Palestine Liberation Organization. Rabin was assassinated in Tel Aviv in 1995 in front of Lahat, and Tel Aviv is home to the remarkable Rabin Museum now and cultural center. Chichlahat was Tel Aviv's counterpart to the extraordinary Jerusalem mayor Teddy Kollek. And although Kollek outshined Lahat in their shared era, together they helped make Israel's two most important cities develop in amazing ways. They are missed even today, 20 years after they left power. And in news from much, much farther away, there is a new NASA mission to the planet Mars. The name of the spaceship is a little too good to be true and a little too Jewish to be an accident. It's called the MAVEN satellite. MAVEN, as all good too Jewish listeners know, is of course Yiddish for an expert. Obviously, this orbiter will soon be an expert on the red planet. The MAVEN mission satellite, that theoretically stands for Mars Atmosphere and Volatile Evolution, but that's only partially an acronym for MAVEN. It really spells MAVE. Well, we'll take the MAVEN. It finally reached orbit around the planet last week after a 10-month journey from Earth. NASA administrators are thrilled with the mission's success thus far. This is a very big day for MAVEN, said David Mitchell, the project manager. We're very excited to join the constellation of spacecraft in orbit at Mars and on the surface of the red planet. We've never sent a spacecraft to Mars just to explore its upper atmosphere, said Bruce Joukowsky, MAVEN's principal investigator. By looking at the nature of the upper atmosphere, we're going to have a good understanding of the history of the atmosphere and how it has been in the past. I'm assuming that somebody Jewish had a hand in naming this latest explorer for NASA, but as yet no one has come forward to claim credit for sending the first official MAVEN into space. But Joukowsky sounds like a Jewish name. Just for the record, we have had not one but two Jewish astronauts as guests on Too Jewish along the way, but we have never interviewed an orbiting satellite named MAVEN. Maybe in the future. And that's the Too Jewish News of Jews around the world. To welcome back our guest, singer-songwriting star David Broza, here's one of his classic cuts, Sigaliot.
מגבר זר תחת דלת מכתבי שירה אליה הם מאירים את אלוניה
We welcome back to Too Jewish, our guest this morning, David Broza, the renowned singer, songwriter, great guitarist, and world musician who has worked with pretty much every kind of musician of every nationality, in particular in Israel, but elsewhere in the world as well. David, what inspires you to write? I know that's not the simplest question, but, you know, do you write better when you're happy? Do you write better when you're depressed? You know, every creator is different.
Well, I don't think there's a particular mood that you have to be in order to write. First of all, it's a discipline. Writing is a discipline like any other thing. So when I'm in a writing mode, that is, I tell myself I want to now concentrate on writing a new album, then I'll give myself a few months and try to work, you know, 10 to 6, you know, like 8 hours a day. Whether I actually manage to write or not, that's a different story. But I give myself, you know, the disciplinary time, you know, and so I try to do that. But I can, you know, it's the matters that you deal with. First of all, in a day to day life, of course, you could be in a bad mood one day and a good and high, and a very very joyful spirit another day. It could affect the writing sometimes. It could be more minor key, more major key. But you know, over the course of my career, I've written for many many years music to poetry, whether it's Hebrew poetry, American poetry, or Spanish poetry. Since I'm trilingual, I sing and I speak Hebrew, English, and Spanish. So I've been working, say, in the United States. I'd go and read in every library that I could, all the poetry I could get my hands and my eyes on, and start eliminating poems and coming down to a collection of poems that I would want to set to music. And that set it sets the pace for me and the mood. I'd be reading a poem that my friend Alberto Rios from Arizona, actually from Chandler, writes. The Chileno Boys, one of the first ones that I actually composed in English, about young fishermen in Chile and how hard their life could be, and yet they have their dreams of when they become men and find the women they want, and they become like their fathers. So this to me immediately throws me into a kind of a maybe folky Latino Spanish mood, and which means it's I can start with the minor key and then go to the major key and play around with different mood setting chord patterns and harmonic patterns until I complete the song and I can tell the story that the poet has put on paper.
There's something so extraordinary about the creative process. It varies so much, not only you, but I think for almost everybody. Do you ever feel constrained by the limits of, okay, that's long enough for a song on an album or to be played on the air?
Well, you know, you want at least two or three songs to be playable on radio in order to help
your career,
your album, your work.
Sure.
But and songs somehow over, you know, it started with songs being 3 minute vignettes, and that was back in the 50s.
Yeah, that was as long as the, you know, album, the 45 could hold.
As the plastic could hold, right.
Right.
So then when the long play came in and suddenly you had 22 minutes aside or whatever, then you could play much longer pieces. And I'm of course born. And for me, my blooming times were in the late 60s and early 70s. So by then, it was all long plays, and it was the White Album, and it was, you know, Bob Dylan, Hurricane, and songs that, you know, Blood on the Tracks, the stuff that would run, you know, way more than 3 minutes. And those were my influences. So I have a much more freedom. And as a matter of fact, my one of my biggest hits here in Israel is a song in the 80s that, you know, is almost 6 minutes long. So,
right.
You are constrained, and you want these things to be, you know, beginning, middle, and end, and get quickly to the punchline, and let's keep the audience interested. But sometimes there's more to say than not to say, and so songs tend to have a longer version, and but, you know, we all want to be successful commercially, but we don't want to give up on our artistic integrity. So it's a play. It's a little game.
You're known for your collaboration with many different musicians of different backgrounds. What are you planning now? Who are you working with now? Who are you interested in working with now?
Well, my most recent album, which is an interesting album because I recorded it and produced it in East Jerusalem in a Palestinian studio.
It's a great song.
Of the album, which is East Jerusalem, West Jerusalem,
right.
Is a song I wrote and I performed with Wyclef Jean of the Fugees. And Wyclef and I worked on this, and it was a collaboration on a song that came after many, many years of friendships. And we've done work in the past before, maybe 10 years ago. And finally, it was time to do something that would pertain to my work here in Israel. And for the production of the album, I actually got in touch and got to have another great American artist, Steve Earle, who came to East Jerusalem and actually produced the album and was with us in the studio for 8 days and eight nights. I brought in my Israeli band, Israeli musicians from Tel Aviv, brought in Arab and Palestinian musicians from East Jerusalem and from all over to the studio, and we created this beautiful environment and great vibe of an album, which I refer to as country and West Bank music, but it's really got all the influences you want to have within what we know as folk rock, and it's unconventionally conventional. It has hints to special vibes and special sounds and takes you to different places, and yet it's got a familiar feel about it. So that's actually my most current album. It's also featured in a documentary that's coming out, which is about the work, and it's the documentary is also called East Jerusalem, West Jerusalem. So we're, this is really what I'm in right now. I'm not entrenched, but I'm taken over by this project and how it's evolving, and I've been working around the clock promoting it.
Do you think, this is sort of a hypothetical, but that would be a very interesting tour to go on to, say, Europe or someplace where there was so much negativity over the Gaza war. Would that be something that would interest you in trying to do?
Oh, boy, yeah. Of course it would be interesting. I mean, you need to have some good sponsor that would help us, because who knows what we're going to come up with. But frankly, I pray, now the reality after this summer in Europe, it has exposed a lot of weaknesses in the different cities of Europe, if it's Paris, if it's Berlin, if it's London. But I don't think these are permanent things. I mean, they're permanently there because there's a lot of ailments and a lot of frustrations in big cities. And I think that the Gaza war exposed it, spoken about all of it, and exposed it actually, has helped infuriate and bring out way more people out on the streets than the people who actually would care about the plight of the Palestinian or the problems in the Middle East. But this is how the political issues become social issues, and I would be more than happy to bring out the music and tour. And this is what I try to do. I mean, we've toured with this album last winter and spring throughout East and West Coast and in the United States, and it was beautiful. It was really beautiful. I brought Mira Awad, who's a Palestinian Israeli singer, who's very, very brave but a great talent, and she came out to sing with me on the road, and the band was terrific, and we had an oud there, and it was an unconventional sounding band, but playing a really straightforward folk rock, the way I play it. I don't know, I think it's straightforward, but it may not be.
I think you play it at a pretty high level, David. I want to thank David Broza, the great Israeli musician and entertainer, singer-songwriter, a longtime friend of Too Jewish, for a great visit here this morning. And where can people go, in addition to coming to the concert when it's here in Southern Arizona, the Fox, where can people go to find out more about your music?
Well, David.Broza, DavidBroza.net.
There we go.
DavidBroza.net. That's my website, and Facebook. That Facebook actually has almost daily post on there and what we're doing.
David, thanks so much, and we look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical playout from David Broza.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in Southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here on Too Jewish this morning with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be best-selling author Gary Steingart, the author of the Russian Debutante's Handbook and the new memoir, Little Failure. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes from our guest this morning, David Broza, with Wycliffe Jean, singing East Jerusalem, West Jerusalem. May you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a Chag Sameach, a happy holiday of Sukkot, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Same face in the Gaza. It's the same face I see out in California. Same face in Jericho. It's the same face I see down in Mexico. Same face in Tel Aviv. It's the same face I see out in New Jersey.
Faces all share the same faces. East Jerusalem, West Jerusalem, Shalom.